This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the podcast here from SoFi Stadium with our wonderful friend David Meltzer. Super excited. And of course, Lacey here with us as she is each and every week. And this week, our guest is super special. I'm pumped up because honestly, I watch his social media and this guy says all the things that at least I want to say. If I can't get him to talk about brokies and relationships, we have failed you miserably. He is, for me, one of the truth tellers on social media. So I'm super excited to have Albert Preciado here from Driven. And make sure you check him out. They constantly have all kinds of great things, from masterminds to other engagements, all the way to their signature event. You want to check those out. Albert, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Let's just start with brokies.
Wait, hold on. I got to say something. Brokies. I got to say something, though, because you know how in husbands and wives send each other memes?
Yeah.
No, Sean sends me his videos.
Yeah. See what Albert's saying?
So every morning I wake up to
If I tell her it doesn't work, but then
if you say it, then I resonate with it. Yeah.
So, you know, Albert's talking about the brokies. She doesn't like for me to talk about the brokies.
But I'm like, but Albert said it right.
I do it the opposite. I have my wife send Albert my memes. See what David said?
I love it. Okay, let's talk about it.
Just tell us what's going on in your head right now. You're like, what did I get myself into?
You know what? I made my money starting businesses.
Yeah.
And then I got into like self-improvement events because I wanted to scale that way. But I tried, my wife always tells me, you gotta be politically correct. You cannot hurt people's feelings. You gotta make everybody happy. And I, along the way, I got a lot of new friends, like, for example, Brad Lee, one of my friends, right? And he talks a lot about being real. Mm-hmm. And then I saw other people that were just being real. Mm-hmm. And then I said, you know what? I tried pleasing everybody and being just politically correct and not being me, but trying to be somebody else to make everybody happy, including the softies and the brokies. And then people were still criticizing me. People were still making fun of me. So I said, I'm not even happy myself with myself. But and I'm trying to please everybody else, and people still don't like me. They still criticize me. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going back to me just being real. Like, if one day I just feel like cussing, I'm going to cuss. If one day I feel like being happy or loud, I'm going to be loud. If I feel like calling people brokies and softies because they are, then I'm going to do that because I think that's going to help them.
Yeah.
And it's not going to help them if I'm just covering them up and making them feel good for being average.
Mm. Well, we live in a culture where that's kind of what everybody wants us to do. We've got to cover everybody up. Everybody should be average. We're all the same. And I love that you take a position that you're like, hey, you guys need to step out. You guys need to
100%.
Do the work.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. Well, we've been talking to a lot of our guests about their concerns. And I know that you, you know, with all of the work that you're doing, I would love to start there. What are the three things? We'll just go one by one.
Yeah.
That on a Friday morning, you wake up today. What are the top three things that you're most concerned about?
That I don't want to be broke, that I don't want to let my family, my people down,
mm-hmm.
that I want to make a difference in the world. I would say those three things. And I know that in order to do all of that, I got to get more known. So there's mm-hmm. three things I do every day, and I've been doing that forever. Because I don't focus on expenses, I just focus on generating more revenue. So the way you're going to do that is by creating more relationships, networking, and you got to promote number one, then you got to promote number two, and then you got to promote number three. So I'm always promoting. So because of my business history, I learned that you got to delegate and you got to hire a lot of people to do the things that are not worth your time anymore so that you focus on the MMAs, which are money-making activities. So that's why I have people posting for me five times a day. So five times a day they're posting, I'm running ads now. I'm going live two times a day for 1 hour. Because I saw David was going 1 hour live every morning.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? I got to double the efforts.
Yeah.
I got to go 1 hour.
You got to beat him out.
And I got to go.
And it works, right?
Yeah. Then I take a 30-minute break to kind of like brush my teeth or pack my bag or whatever. Then I go another hour back to back. And the thing is that I'm getting so many leads. I'm getting in front of so many new people. So that's helping me grow my personal brand, which is huge right now. If you have a personal brand, I was talking to your guy. He was telling me that you have 200 gigs this year.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I hope one's driven, right?
Yeah, no, November definitely. I'll
book. Okay, good. I was going to go down to 199. Exactly.
So 201, yeah.
You know, one of the epiphanies that I've had through the same journey, and I know you two do the same thing, is going live. It the simple things to do are unfortunately simple not to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Almost everyone can do that. What's great about going live is you're only going to pick up the people that resonate with you, because they're going to pop in and if you're not resonating with them. And so when you speak at your frequency, your level, the MMA level, not to the brokies and the softies, they're going to come on brokies and softies and feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
And they're going to go away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to end up with the people that show up, the big investors, the people that come to masterminds that actually do the work and execute on the work. But the thing that resonated with me the most was one of my friends said when I first started, Dave, it is much better for people to hate you for who you are than love you for who you're not.
Right.
So stop 100%. Being who you're not.
Yeah.
And I went home literally and I'm like, why am I trying to please everyone? Because when you do that, it's not that everyone's going to hate you. Remember they say, if you try to please everyone, you're going to please no one. Bullshit. It's the thing that I've learned is if you try to please everyone, the same 10% of the people are going to hate you. The same 10% of the people are going to love you. You're just going to get more of the 80% that actually can be in your community of people that want to buy from you and sell for you.
Yeah. Like, for example, I did a video about my daughter because she goes to school. She doesn't go to school. The teacher comes to her, a private teacher. So she comes to her and then she also does, she has some days where she does Zoom. So my daughter's learning so much. Like, she learned how to play the piano by herself because she Googled it on her iPad.
Because she takes after her mom.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And she looked it up on the iPad, downloaded an app by herself on how to play the piano, and 24 hours later, she learned how to play the piano because she knows technology. But the teacher, you know, comes to her, and she goes to school 7 days a week.
So
I posted that video. But what people don't realize is that she's not a slave to the hours.
Right.
And whenever like she earns it, we're like, school's canceled today, we're going to Disneyland, VIP tour. But my marketing team, we've learned that if you chop up a video in a certain way and then move around like the fragments, like maybe put a hook in the beginning and then make it controversial, it gets millions of views, it goes viral. So and then people start criticizing me that I'm not a good human, that I'm forcing my daughter,
How could you?
Yeah, all kinds of things, right? But then this video got 2 million views, I think, 4,500 comments, so many shares. So in 28 days on the analytics, it got me 30,000 new followers, and then 5,000 people unfollowed me. They didn't like the message. Yeah. But my net is still 25,000 new in 28 days. So that's why you create the content and you keep posting five times a day on all platforms. Like when I go live, I go live on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, on YouTube, everywhere. And I want to be everywhere. I want a billion people to know who I am.
Well,
Or more. Yeah. Don't limit yourself, bro.
I think the lesson here, because you both are kind of saying the same thing, is number one, if you're going to do all of these things, you have to do it from a place of authenticity. And I was watching somebody do a talk the other day, and they were talking about love and gratitude, high vibration, authenticity, high vibration. And you were just saying offline before we started, you work 18 hours a day.
You're right.
You couldn't love doing that if you weren't your authentic self, right? So we talk a lot about, oh, people want to resonate with you. They're going to attract into your world. But you also have to resonate with you. And I think you can't do what you're doing. None of us could work the way that we work, get our messages out there if we weren't authentic. So first off, like, how do you encourage people to step into that? Because people are scared, and the narrative is you have to show up this way. You have to deliver the message in this way. You can't have an opinion here. And they get scared, and then they hate what they do, and they hate the people they're attracting.
Yeah. Well, for me, I grew up with, I think, a chip on my shoulder. Mm. Because, like, I was an ESL student, former special ed student. So I remember that when I was growing up, I used to take the school bus, and that yellow school bus, and I used to get bullied, and it was just, I hated school. Mm. So And also I saw all my kids, all the kids that grew up with me, they were getting their college degrees and I was just a failure. Like I drop out, college dropout, 1.8 GPA in high school, middle school, and I was just, nobody gave me a chance.
But you were trying.
So I just didn't like what I did. I didn't like school. Like I didn't like dinosaurs and presidents and all that
history
stuff.
And
I'm
all
like
that.
English. I'm like, what are we doing here?
English.
I just remember that I wanted so bad to be rich. And I told my dad one time.
Me too.
When I was 6 years old, I used to go paint with him in Bel Air, Beverly Hills, because my dad was a painter. And I remember that I saw that side, and then I was in school and I hated school. I didn't like that, and I wanted to be rich. And I told my dad one day I'm going to be rich and I'm going to help a lot of people. So he said, and I told him, I'm going to change your life, Dad. I'm going to change your life, Mom. But when I got out of college, when I dropped out, I saw these people that were driving Benz and BMWs, like nice cars, Rolex watches. And I would find myself in IHOP because I would go out, 19 years old, 20 years old. I would go out with my buddies, and I would be hungover at IHOP. Mm. Or it was IHOP. And then I would see this guy getting there with this cute girl, and they were hungover too. But he had a Rolex, a beautiful girl, and a nice car. And I'm like, wait a minute, what is this guy doing and what am I doing? And then I found out they were real estate. They were into real estate agents. And that. So then I got into real estate. And I, at the same time, I read this book that changed my life, Rich Dad, Poor Dad book.
Yeah.
And then I started learning like, well, what is self-employed? What is business owner and this? So then I got really passionate and interested in learning that. So I was passionate about that. I wanted to be a business person. I wanted to be rich. So that excited me. So when you do something that excites you, that you're passionate about, you never get tired. Mm-hmm. Like I could do 10 of these back to back all day and I won't get tired. But if I'm doing something that I hate to do, then I'm not gonna work as hard. So I think you do have to have some sort of passion in what you do so that you never stop. Like I don't see work as work, I see work as life.
One thing to that measure, a gift about wanting to be rich, is one of the key components of pursuing your potential is understanding for the sake of what. And if for the sake of what is very narrow, it gets very difficult to learn to love what you do or love what you do. One thing I found is a blessing about wanting to be rich is that the for sake of what is inherent in whatever it is that makes the most money. So yeah. I believe that Albert and I, and Lace, I know you too, that if we could have found something that would have made more, for me it was selling legal research online.
Yeah.
It was my best offer out of law school to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I would have loved, if someone said, I'm gonna pay you $1 million a year to tap your forehead all day long, I would have loved tapping my forehead for the sake of being rich.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good for the sake of what. And then one of the questions I have is, as you became rich and you have Rolexes and nice cars and a beautiful wife and you're not hungover anymore at IHOP, although you could be if you wanted to be, how have you changed your value system once you received the Ferraris and the watches and a beautiful wife? Have your values changed on for the sake of you, for what I want to be rich for? Why do you want to be rich now?
Well, I think that because I'm Latino American, I'm Mexican American.
No.
I feel that I have an obligation to be that example to my Latino community.
Nice.
So now, like, I cannot do things that are not going to be good examples for the new generation that comes. Of course, I like everybody. But like the way I grew up as a wetback, people that were making fun of me because they used to call me a wetback, I don't want them to feel that pain. So I know that we all here have superpowers in different ways. But for me, I'm a very proud Mexican American, and I want to help my Latino community. But I'm also a very proud American, because without America, like, I wouldn't have the options, the opportunities to go after my big dreams. So I see myself as an example, and I can't let my people down. So it's not even about me. Like, if I want to go back and do something else, I can't. Like, now my obligations are to the people that work for the companies that we have and for the community all over the world that we reach through social media.
I got to hook you up with Chicharito. He's like your twin brother in that
respect.
Yeah,
yeah. So, nice. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
I
isn't
like
there still, though, that exists almost this inherent desire to not be rich, to go back to where you were? Because you said you want to help other people avoid the pain that you went through. Mm-hmm. But on some level, you don't want to have the pain yourself. You don't want to go back there. Because I knew I grew up with not a lot of money. And sometimes I say a lot of what I'm doing is also driving me away from that, away from going back there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a bigger pain for me is, like, I'd rather be dead than not achieve that than fail.
Mm.
So, like,
fail or quit, would you say? Because we're all going to fail,
we're gonna
right?
Fail. Yeah. Right, we do things that are, yeah.
I would say both, quit or fail.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think there's a difference with failure, the way I see it. Like, you could get down or lose or, you know, like a small loss, but you can't quit. I think that's where you were going, right? You just can't be a quitter, because when you quit once, then you're a quitter for life. Mm. So I never quit. And that's what I think my people see, because we have the mortgage company, the real estate company, escrow company. We have the Driven events, the Driven company, I've been a business owner for 11 years, and before that I was self-employed for another 10 years. So I've been self-employed for 21 years. I don't know if I look it, but I'm going to turn 41. March 29.
You don't.
So my birthday's coming up. Just in case you guys want to give me a gift.
I do.
Okay, absolutely.
I'll give you a fake watch.
Yeah, yeah. Let me have it.
It looks real.
But a lot cheaper.
But I have that experience, and I think as a leader, you got to lead by example. So yes. When times get tough, a leader cannot show the weakness. So I still show up, even when there's times where we were going out of business, I would show up excited outside, even though inside I was like trying to figure things out. I'm like, shit, what are we going to do today? Like,
the oh shit inside.
Yeah. But then my army responded well, because they were like, man, we're going through the hardest times. But Albert's here like nothing. He's like excited. He's like working out. He's in the trainings and he's pumping everybody up. So that alone, I think, is the difference between championship businesses and just average businesses.
Well, one of the things that I admire about both of you is that you guys are relatively open books relative to missteps in your past. You both share very openly, and you know, and I've heard you, Albert, share your stories of that sort of wake-up call. Do you think that wake-up call is essential for everyone? Do we have to get that? Do we have to hit rock bottom to find our greatness?
Great question.
I think we always have wake-up calls. And sometimes we have we keep having little wake-up calls, like baby wake-up calls. So you got to pay attention to that.
Monitor?
I think we have one side of our brain that's like the evil side, and then we have the good side. So we get temptations, you know, like we're human. But I don't think people should hit rock bottom to change. Like when I talk about rock bottom, I thought about it. And I'm like, I wasn't even, it wasn't really rock bottom. 2008, when I lost everything, I was still living beachside. Because I was homeless, but I had my car, and I would park it in front of Newport Beach, Corona del Mar. And I would wake up to a nice sunrise, and with the beach, I would have a nice breeze and have good sex. I don't know about you guys, but Ford Explorers, they were made for that.
Big back seats
recommend
or
those.
What?
If you're a little bit of a bigger guy, then you get the Expedition and works just as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't really rock bottom. You know, rock bottom is if you die.
Yeah.
So if you're not, if you're alive, if you wake up and you're alive, how can you be in rock bottom? Yeah. You know,
So maybe it's just a situation that ignites the greatness in you. It doesn't have to be a rock bottom situation. It's something that happens that you become aware of.
But I do think the farther you fall, the energy and physics of it, the higher you can bounce.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so a lot of people may never fall enough to understand the energy
the
it takes to get to a different self-image.
Yeah.
And so if we face great challenges, it doesn't have to be economics, right? People that have dyslexia or go to war, I've seen it in the entrepreneurial space. There seems to be some sort of inertia in both directions that says, wait a second, you know, this is my depth and I'm going to equal it in my height or greater. Mm-hmm. And I have found, because people say, oh my God, you know, I lost everything, but it wasn't $100 million. I'm like, you know, everything's everything. And I will tell you this.
You lost a lot.
A lot, over $100 million. But here's what I know about, if you've made $100 million, you have a lot of advantages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In relationships and knowledge and all types of different things going on in your life. So I actually tell people when they say, you know, I went bankrupt, I lost 100,000, but it wasn't 100 million. I said, here's the difference. Your bottom was harder than mine, mm-hmm. right? Because I fell with this inertia, but I didn't lose all these relationships, this knowledge. I gained a lot more dummy tax.
Right.
And so it's actually an advantage to have lost that much money comparatively. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I would have had a much more difficult time if I went bankrupt only having 100,000 in one house instead of the golf course and ski mountain and homes and all this stuff, because I had all of those relationships plus the knowledge of where I was going to go next.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting thing, but it wasn't my bottom.
Yeah.
You know, people think that must have been.
But let me ask you a question though. If you can go back in time and live a different life and not go through what you went, would you go back and change it, or do you like the life you've had?
Right. I wouldn't. I mean, I think most people would tell you, I would not change it. I will tell you the two most difficult things is the way that I treated my wife. And so I know I definitely am in a much better place, but it hurts me still to think like that I breached my relationship with, like, because I have a really, like, you and you. Like, she's everything to me. And so, and then losing my mom's house, it still rings. Like, I know that that changed my life and I've been a better person for it. But those were the two things that if I could still be where I am today and had learned the lessons without having to hurt my wife or to have my mom move, I would have chose if I could still be where I am. But if they said, you can't be where you are today unless those two things happen, you know, I definitely would still hurt my wife and take my mom's house away if it means I couldn't be where I am today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about, for the two of you too, then, this is an interesting discussion in the ego. Why does it not bother you to share that, right? Like, so a lot of people, we live in a world of social media where they are who they present themselves as. Mm-hmm. How can you say, like, oh, I remember that time I got a DUI? Mm-hmm. Whereas there's a lot of people that they got a DUI and
would never share.
They don't
it.
Want right. anybody to know. Yeah. Or, oh, I remember that time that I lied to my wife and I went to this party. How can you overcome ego to, why is that comfortable for someone that's in a position of success like you two are?
For me, when I just say the truth, you don't have to keep making up lies, and it allows you to think clear and you just move on. Like, if you mess up, you messed up. And I think sharing it on social media, you help other people that might be in that situation. That's why I say, like, I had a cocaine problem. I had all these DUIs, you know, and I did a lot of bad things. But I think this helps other people, because then I get messages and somebody tells me, hey, you know what? I have a cocaine problem, but I heard your story. I just quit last week and I've been clean for a week. And, you know, that makes you feel good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a practice. I remember one of my mentors in social media, Gary Vaynerchuk, mm-hmm. when I was helping him with the sports agency, and he wanted to help me build this social media, same way we do together, right. and we do together. And I was so proud of myself. I said, oh my God, I admitted I went bankrupt. And he winked at me and he said, I can't wait to see what else you tell us.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's a practice. You dip your toe into the truth and you start realizing it feels really good, not just to you, but to the people that are truly with you. And again, I want people to think I am. And you end up collecting all the people that are grateful and forgiving that you've taught the dummy tax that they may not have to, when you feel comfortable and confident in saying, here's my truth and this is what I learned from it. Maybe you won't have to go to the degree that I went to learn the lessons that I learned. You will have to experience some of it. I'm a firm believer, you can't learn a lesson unless there's some portion of experience for yourself, intentionality in it. And too many people try to do that by reading a book and saying, you know, I read Oliver Twist and now I know what it's like to be an orphan. No, you don't. If you experience a little bit of separation from your parents, then it means more to you, the story of Oliver Twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the challenges that Lacey and I face a lot is we are chiropractors by profession. So now people then pigeonhole us and put us in that box. You began in real estate.
Yeah.
So it's real easy for people to say, okay, real estate, mortgage, Albert. But now your personal brand is so much more. And you've talked about, hey, just getting the eyeballs, getting the message out there. What do you want ultimately people when they see Albert Preciado to know you for?
Somebody that started from nothing and created things that he wasn't supposed to create, and just to show people that there's endless possibilities, but it's up to you to go out there and execute. Because I think a lot of people, they think they're gonna go see David Meltzer speak and then they're gonna leave and then their life is gonna change. But if they don't put the work, if they don't execute, then David can't execute for them. So very early, you know, I got the work ethic from my parents, because my mom was a teacher assistant and my dad was a grinder. He would go paint homes and he would work Saturdays and Sundays sometimes. And he would come back tired where he couldn't even walk. Like he was limping because he had to paint these big houses, climb ladders and do a lot. And he just came back and then his face and his arms were all painted from the paint. So I would see him, man, he's tired. And so instead of getting mad and saying like my dad wasn't here enough, I learned work ethic. So then my mom, she would always tell me like, you gotta read books, you gotta learn and you gotta go to school. So then I combined learning and hard work. And then the third thing is think big. Think big, because it takes the same amount of effort to think small than to think big. So if you have the heart, the work ethic, and you're very big into self-improvement, and then you think just way bigger, then you're gonna accomplish that. Because it's what you believe happens. Like, I don't know, like I've been saying, I'm gonna be a billionaire next year, I'm gonna be a billionaire next year, but I've been saying it, I'm putting that in the air.
Yeah.
But before that, I was saying, I'm gonna open up a business. And I was saying, I'm gonna get a Ferrari. And then I was saying that we're gonna live in Beverly Hills, we're gonna live in Bel Air. Everything became a reality. You know, now we have, one of the things that I'm the most proud of is I have three daughters. And they're all named after Ferraris.
That's awesome.
Italia is seven. She's 458 Italia Ferrari. And then the four-year-old, her name is Berlin, after Berlinetta. And then the younger one, she's the cheaper Ferrari, the California. So her name's Callie. Yeah, so, but.
That was after he found out how expensive the first two was. He's like, I need a cheaper one.
Yeah. But
my youngest is most expensive.
She's the one that gets everybody excited about Ferraris.
Right.
So. Yeah, but life is good. And I think very big, very important is being ethical. Like you don't F people, you don't steal, you know, you don't cheat. You just do things right. And even if it takes a little longer, that's what I learned, that when you do the right thing, maybe it's harder, takes longer, and it's painful, more painful, but you never have to worry when you go to sleep on, man, something can happen. You know, like, and then good things happen to good people.
Yeah.
I love it. Albert, thanks for sharing your message with us.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.